Welcome to the Fallible Man Podcast. At the end of this episode, you'll know what story work is if you didn't know what it was before. You'll understand how it works and how it could possibly apply to your life and if it's something you are actually interested in utilizing. And for the first time ever on the show, you can experience a live story work coaching session with our guest Dave Robinson as he coaches me directly and you indirectly because you can play along as you listen. And you can see what story work does in real time and if it's something that would be worth your time or something you think might help you. Dave also has an incredible offer for our audience, so be sure to stick around through the end. Check out this thought from Dave, and let's get into it.
Breathe. There's my favorite quote is a Viktor Frankl quote. He wrote Man's Search for Meaning. Tremendous book if you haven't read it. In between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and our freedom. So in between stimulus, what happens to you, response, how you respond, there's a space that I like to call the wedge. And any personal development work is all about expanding that wedge between the stuff that happens to you and how you react. And in that wedge, no matter how big or small that wedge is, you can always... always take a breath, and that will change how you react, whether you do that at work, you do that at home when you're dealing with your kids or your spouse, whether you're working through something super positive or super negative, anything in between, breathe and your life will change.
Here's the $1 million question. How do men like us reach our full potential, grow into the men we dream of being, while taking care of our responsibilities, working, being good husbands, fathers, and still take care of ourselves? Well, that's the big question. In this podcast, we'll help you answer those questions and more. My name is Brent, and welcome to the Fallible Man Podcast. Welcome to the Fallible Man Podcast, your home for all things man, husband, and father. Big shout out to Fallible Nation. That's our private community, and there's links down in the description or the show notes wherever you're viewing this or listening to this show. Guys, warm welcome to our first time listeners. Hey, if you're just checking us out for the first time, I know there's a lot competing for your attention. So thanks for checking us out. I'd love to hear what you think about it. You can reach me at The Fallible Man on almost any social media platform or leave us a review. Tell us what you thought of the show. I'd love to check that out. My name is Brent. Today, my special guest is Master Story Work Coach, Dave Robinson. Dave, welcome to The Fallible Man Podcast.
Brent, thank you for having me, man. I am pumped to chat with you and your audience and have an awesome conversation today, man.
This is going to be good, man. I'm excited for this one, but we like to start pretty light, Dave. So how's your trivia?
It depends on the subject matter. So we'll find out.
Fair. That's fair.
Yeah.
How long did dinosaurs live on the earth? Is it A, 100 to 150 million years, B, 150 to 200 million years, C, 200 plus million years, or D, never?
I like your D, never answer, but I'm not going to go with that as the final. I'm going to go C, longer than 200 million years.
All right, guys, you know the rules. Don't cheat. Don't go ahead. Don't look it up. Play along. For God's sake, don't write it down if you're driving. And we'll come back to that later in the show. Now, Dave, in this moment, just today, nothing else. Who is Dave Robinson in your own words?
Dave Robinson is a man who inspires others by helping people to enter the depths of their own inner cave and fight their own inner dragon. Dave is a man who loves nature, loves impact, and is stoked to be alive.
Dave, are you a Harry Potter person?
My two sisters are. I'm not as much of a Harry Potter person. I'm privy to Harry Potter.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, at the beginning, your first year in Hogwarts, the sorting hat puts you into one of four houses. Do you know the houses?
I don't know the houses.
The houses are Slytherin, Gryffindor, Hufflepuff, or Ravenclaw. Which house would the sorting hat put you in?
Ravenclaw sounds pretty tight. I would be a Raven. Yeah. And I don't know whether that's good or bad.
they're intellectuals.
Yeah. Okay, perfect. I'll take the Ravenclaw then. That sounds cool.
For not knowing, hey, about that, you're doing good, right?
Easy.
In the zombie apocalypse, what's your weapon of choice?
My zombie apocalypse weapon of choice is my 12-gauge Mossberg in the bathroom. May or may not actually be there. We'll go with the may. And yeah, that's probably what I'm going to grab.
It's an interesting place to keep it. But
yeah, you never know. You never know. There are others elsewhere. And I feel like that's the middle of the house situation. And I was thinking one day, I was like, what if I'm in the shower or something like that? You know, like I got to have something in the bathroom. So that's where my mind went.
No little plexiglass box with the, you know, break glass
break if need. Yeah, no, thank you. My first thought, though, was I have a recurve bow. Like I really love shooting bows and arrows, and I've never actually shot a compound bow, but my grandfather gave me his like 70-year-old cherry wood recurve, and I have had such a joy shooting that. And I'd like to say I would be good enough to, you know, pick heads off at distance and reload fast enough, but it's probably not going to be the case. And so I went with the more modern weapon of choice there. But in my heart, I'm a Lord of the Rings guy, and I'm just like picking people off on the run with, you know, with my recurve bow. So,
well, you can't go wrong with the Mossberg. I love my Mossberg, but I feel you on the bow. I actually learned how to shoot bow on a recurve.
Nice.
I have a nice compound bow for hunting, but I grew up shooting regular bows, recurve bows. And then eventually, like I was, I think 17 before I got to compound bows. But we just actually finished rewatching Lord of the Rings, the movies, with my daughters.
Awesome.
They love Legolas. Like they are so interested in archery just because of that movie.
Good for them and good for him. You know, I think he inspired a generation, you know, it's fantastic.
They got to shoot him at Girl Scout camp. Now they both want bows. I was like, okay.
It's a good problem to have, man. It's a really good problem to have. Yeah. As a father. Yeah.
Drinks, coffee, tea, energy drink, soda, or something else?
Coffee. I'm a coffee guy. My fiance Ruslana actually owned a coffee shop and when we first met. And so I would sneak my way over there whenever I could to buy, you know, hang out with her more and get her coffees and smoothies and stuff like that. And so I am drinking a coffee right now. It's actually her old coffee mug. Her shop was called Pulp Fiction. And then she got a nice cease and desist letter from the, you know, Hollywood or whatever it is. And so she changed her name to Pulp RVA, which is Richmond, Virginia, where we're from. So I'm a coffee guy.
They suck, man. I would take that as like flattery.
That's what I thought. It's like it's coffee, not movie. And it's totally different. I thought the trademarks didn't have to overlap like that, but that was apparently not a battle she wanted to fight. I don't blame her.
Yeah, so, I'm not sure I'd take on the movie studios myself.
Right.
They don't have a sense of humor.
No, not in the least.
What purchase of $100 or less have you made in the last year that's had the biggest impact on your life?
Great question. I'm a gear guy, mm-hmm. right? And I have bought a lot of gloves, like good. I run too, right? So like good running gloves, you know, and I think that there's no such thing as cold weather. It's just bad gear. So I've got like good hats, I've got good gloves, and there's an outdoor company called OR. I don't know whether you say that or it's just OR. I don't know, but I think it stands for like outdoor recreation, but don't quote me on that one. I'm not 100% positive. But I got a couple of their gloves and it's just, you know, it's wintertime here and it's perfect. It's just, it's great. So if you have poor weather where you are, buy good gear and you'll be able to go outside in the elements.
Now, I've lived in Norfolk. How's the weather comparatively in Richland?
It is, it's cold. We're having a cold winter and, you know, obviously cold is relative. all things considered, if it's below freezing Fahrenheit, it's cold to me. And, you know, we've been dipping down into the 10s and 20s at night, so much so that we've raised rabbits on our little homestead for meat and fertilizer and things like that. And all I got to buy new bottles for everybody because they've all frozen and cracked. And, you know, we're going out there and pouring almost boiling hot water into their new little tin water containers to melt out the ice and get it so they can actually drink their water. So, you know, it's cold, man, but springs are coming as it always does. So I'm excited for that.
Eventually it's going to get there.
Yeah.
What is your best playground insult?
Ooh, man. Playground insult. So this is PG, or G. I feel like it's got to be a yo mama type situation joke. You know, I don't know any good yo mama jokes anymore, but I think a response to anything with yo mama is probably adequate playground fire upper, you know, like that's going to escalate the situation regardless of what was said or anything, you know, a yo mama response for sure.
Let me guess, over 35.
I am 35, 36 next week. So 2 weeks. So, yeah. Well done. Well done.
Sorry, there's a whole generation where those were the answer, and then they kind of like disappeared, which blew my mind because I'm 44. I'm right in that age group of that was like, I remember when your mama jokes became a thing.
Yeah.
And were for years, and it was the ultimate like upper. Someone would say something like your mom.
Yeah. Oh my God, that hit me in my chest just you doing that right there. You know,
right?
Like, dude,
oh, those are fighting.
Those are fighting words. That's fantastic. I might bring them back on social media. You know, to haters.
Mm-hmm. The funny thing is, like, you get below 30, and they wouldn't get it at all. It's not a knock on that generation. It's just. Right. Certain things hit with certain generations.
Yeah.
With the way people's outlooks are and attitudes are much below 30, they're going to be like, what's that even supposed to mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, my second answer, which was like a PG-13 answer, was the XXX, the suck it like that. Uh-huh. That would absolutely be, you know, up there as well. Cause I don't know how that swept the nation, but it sure did. So.
If you could go back and give your 18-year-old self one piece of advice, what would it be?
Don't go to college.
I like it.
Yeah. Travel instead. I feel like it was all things considered, you know, I graduated, I've got a degree, you know, I've et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But all things considered, looking back, it was not worth the money that I spent. And nor do I feel like it was worth the 4 years of my prime time life to go and just party and, you know, mess around and study stuff that I didn't really give a crap about. And so I would have traveled instead.
You party?
No.
Not in college.
No.
That doesn't happen. That's just in the movies.
Right. And it's because it's in the movies that it ends up happening. We're coming back to Hollywood here. And, you know, yeah.
It's like hypnotherapy. It's just in the movies. Yeah.
Exactly. Pre-show joke.
Sorry. Couldn't. If you guys have been around the show before, you know, I actually did a show with a hypnotherapist and she was very gracious when I made that joke. So shout out to her for that. What is one totally random fact that people don't know about you?
Totally random fact that people don't know about me. Well, I would say the rabbits, but I already spoiled that one. I hate baseball. I know that's going to, yeah, people are going to hit end. You know, there's a small segment of the population that's, you know what, screw this guy. You know, but I hate baseball. I grew up a soccer player. My best friend, five houses down, also named Dave, since I was 8 years old, was a huge baseball player. And his dad tried to get me to play over and over and over and over and over again. It just was, you know, I played a ton of sports growing up and I just couldn't stand it. And I still, to this day, I probably go to, like, we've got a double A team here, and I go to one game every half dozen years just for the sake of, like, you know, just poking around and checking it out. And I show up in like the third inning, and I'll leave by like the seventh inning. And I'm like, oh, that's enough baseball for the next half dozen years, dude. So yeah, I am just not a baseball guy.
You know, I totally get you. I had a friend who's actually a professional pitcher, and he'd come to Washington. His team would come to Washington and play against the Mariners. And I wouldn't even go for his games. I don't like you that much, dude. I'm not driving to Seattle and paying that price and sitting there for that long for that.
Yeah.
I'm
going
to, like, wave at you for 2 minutes. I can jump on a Zoom call with you. Like,
catch me afterwards. Yeah. Yeah. Let me know where y'all are going to eat dinner, and I'll see you there. Yeah. That type of situation.
I went to a event someone put on. They were like trying to get, I used to be a youth minister. And so they were trying to connect with local youth ministers for their mission project. And they got like the big box and stuff like that. So my wife and I went, because I'd never been in a box, right?
And free food?
Yeah, free food, box seats. Yeah. The best part of the whole game was like the field crew like did this like coordinated dance on the diamond as they were straightening it up between innings. Best part of the whole game, right?
100%. We do. There's the local team, like in and around July 4th. It's like the June 30th to July 10th games all have fireworks. Mm-hmm. And when I was in high school or probably middle school, my dad would drag us to that as like a twofer. It's like, I took you to an event and there's free fireworks here. So, you know, it was like a kill two birds with one stone situation, which I totally can appreciate. 100% now. I have since gotten privy to that, to the idea that there's fireworks here, and there's our favorite ice cream joint is just right down the road. And so now what we'll do is we'll go and get ice cream and just kind of walk up the hill a little bit about 9:30 on, you know, July 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, something like that. Don't need to go to the game, don't need to pay anything other than for the ice cream, and then we get to watch the fireworks and then go home.
And there you go.
That is my hack of Richmond, Virginia. If you ever come and visit around that time frame, that's what to do.
I dig it. That's a much better solution. Eat ice cream and watch it's hard to hide fireworks.
Yeah, good point. Good point.
What's something everyone should know about you before we dig into the meat of today's show?
Crushing it with these questions, man. I have found my hedgehog. It's a concept by Jim Collins, who wrote Good to Great. Mm-hmm. And the hedgehog is the intersection. Think of a Venn diagram. The hedgehog is the intersection of the thing that you love to do, that you, not that you like, not that you're good at, but, you know, the thing that you love to do that you would do for free, but also drives your economic engine or fills your economic reservoir. And the third thing is, this thing has to be something that you were born for, created for, or could one day be the best in the world at. And that for me is story work. It wasn't, you know, coaching in a D1 strength and conditioning department. It wasn't, you know, fitness or health. It wasn't financial planning. It wasn't any myriad number of other things that I've hats that I've worn, jobs that I've done, et cetera. I never either loved it or, you know, like I love soccer, like, but no one's paying me to play soccer. Like, that's not the hedgehog, right? I have to pay twice a year, $80 now. Now they raised it to 90 last fall. So $90 twice a year for the privilege of playing soccer with my friends, you know? So that's not the hedgehog, right? But this story work is my hedgehog. So when you hear us talk about this, I truly love this, and it's something that I'm going to do for the rest of my life.
Awesome. Awesome. Guys, we've been getting to know Dave so far, and just who he is, what he's about, a little bit about his personality. In the next part of the show, we're going to dive into Dave's story. What is story work, since that's what we're talking about today? How can it help you? Why is it beneficial, et cetera, et cetera? We're going to roll to our sponsor, and we'll be right back with more from Dave Robson. Are you tired of tossing and turning at night, searching for that elusive perfect pillow, or just better bedding in general? Well, look no further. Our podcast is proudly sponsored by MyPillow, the renowned American pillow manufacturer. With over 50 million pillows sold and a legacy of quality, MyPillow knows that you work hard for your money and want quality products at an affordable price. That's why they're offering all TFM listeners and friends the special promo code for massive savings year-round. Enjoy some of the finest sheets, pillows, slippers, mattress toppers, bath towels, and comforters on the market today. Save big when you order with free promo code TFM. That's TFM, the Fallible Man podcast, obviously, on all 250 quality American products at MyPillow. MyPillow is here to transform your sleep experience. And as a special treat for our listeners, you can enjoy up to 80% off your order with the code TFM. Yes, you heard that right, up to 80% off. You'll not only enjoy some of the most comfortable and cozy products you've ever bought, but also support a great American company, the Fallible Man podcast, and save a ton of money doing it. It's really a triple win. So why wait? Head over to mypillow.com/TFM or call 800-796-9775. That's 800-796-9775 to order now. You can't be your best without a good night's sleep, and MyPillow delivers. Guys, welcome back. In the first part of the show, we just spent some time getting to know who Dave is, what he's about, what he's like. In this part of the show, we're going to dive into Dave's story and what is story work. We're talking about story work today and how it can help you. But like when Dave and I connected, I honestly, that was my first question. It's like, what the hell is story work? I have no idea. So we're going to dig into that and why we're actually even talking about it, because I think it's going to be really important and really relative to your life. So Dave, tell us your story, right? You mentioned a couple different things in the previous portion of the show. You have a background of jobs like myself. You've been through several and you landed in this. You started out as a teacher, right? So tell us the story of Dave Robinson.
Yeah. So I looking back, I've always been in the service industry. I've always wanted to impart knowledge or teach or coach or advise in some capacity. I've been an athlete my whole life, but never really a good one. I've been a more multifaceted and well-rounded. So if you, baseball aside, you put a sports ball or item in front of me, I'm going to look like I've at least done it a couple times in the past. And so I was always athletic. I feel like I've got enough of the ADHD in me to be a jack of all trades and a master of few. I don't like the phrase master of none, but a master of few. And I actually went to college to be a high school history teacher. And again, in the previous segment, you know that my true thoughts was I should have just traveled the world for 4 years during that time frame. But I found out a couple weeks before I graduated, as I was applying to master's programs, I had the realization, the download, the come to Jesus moment, the, you know, finally listen to my gut of like, I don't really want to do this. And I realized that I didn't want to be the teacher that only wanted to have his summers off and coach high school soccer and, you know, connect with the students, right? I didn't care about the subject matter at all whatsoever. I could read, I could write. That's why I chose it. And you know, I had a minor in education. And so again, I like teaching, but I didn't want to teach that. And so I had fallen in love with strength and conditioning over the previous 4 years, as my random roommate freshman year was like a 4-time national junior powerlifting champion. So I got to school as a little skinny soccer player, and I ended, you know, with being totally obsessed with powerlifting and strongman stuff. And that led me to get a job in the library at school. That was my part-time job so that I could go sneak off into the nutrition journal section and, you know, have access to all the PubMed stuff that I wouldn't have access to, you know, otherwise. And so I did a powerlifting competition in my hometown of Richmond, Virginia, like 3 weeks before I graduated, right after I had made this, oh, I'm not applying for master's programs. Oh, I'm not going to be a history teacher. Now I have nothing to do or don't know what I'm going to do anyway. So right after that decision, I meet this guy named Jay DeMayo, and Jay DeMayo is still at the University of Richmond. And he shared with me that they had an opening that I could or should apply for, which I did, and I got the job. So I was a full-time intern with the University of Richmond for over a year. I worked with football, men's soccer, women's soccer, field hockey, lacrosse. I worked as a personal trainer at a gym, and I worked as a coach at a youth strength and conditioning facility here in town as well. And what I found was, as much as I loved the subject matter, as much as I loved, being around the team, like traveling with the football team and sideline for games, like that was super cool. As much as I loved imparting that knowledge in that capacity, I didn't love the lack of flexibility. I didn't love the lack of income. And I didn't feel like my greatest impact in my life was teaching people how to back squat and, recording 40 times. So because of that and those things, I ended up leaving after about a year to get into financial planning, which I felt was my opportunity to make my family proud, put on a suit and tie, get a big boy job, go to an office, learn a whole bunch of stuff that I figured would be valuable and important down the road. But most importantly for me at the time was to gain that flexibility of time and income and feel like I was making more of an impact in people's lives. And frankly, man, I didn't think I was ever going to leave that career. I had planned on doing that for 30 years and retiring and being done. You know, as it turns out, I was in for about 6.5, close to 7. And I knew probably 4 years in, 5 years in, that I was starting to get the rumblings of like, I don't really know about this. I was working my butt off. I was grinding. And this is my early to mid 20s. So it's kind of what you're supposed to do, quote unquote. But I was burning the candle at both ends, 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. and then networking afterwards and then back and, back and forth again, working on weekends, whole nine yards, trying to build a network, build a business. And again, I kind of got the rumblings of, I don't really love this. So I started a side business, writing workout programs for folks and for, doing some nutritional coaching for folks, and got that up to the point where I was like, oh, I wonder if I were to do this full time, obviously it would exponentially grow, obviously, right? Translation, it didn't. And I had this moment where I had my first major health scare of my life. Now I'd like broken my wrists and collarbone and had ankle stuff going and had concussions, but I got bit by a spider. And that sent me into the hospital for like 3 days. Yeah. And yeah, it was a bummer. And the kicker with this was, I never was going to die, right? They just were trying to figure it out. They get the infection down. And Saturday night turned to Sunday. It's now my third day in, and I'm supposed to be released Sunday afternoon. And it's like 1 a.m. Sunday morning, and I'm like hooked up to all these machines and, like et cetera, as one is in the hospital. And I had the thought of, today's Sunday. That means tomorrow's Monday. That means I have to go back to work. Maybe I'll just stay here another day. And it was like, lightning bolt to the head of, dude, you want to stay in a hospital bed rather than go back to your own firm? It's not like I had a boss. It's not like I had had to go back. But I laid in that hospital bed for the next couple hours. I think I eventually got some sleep, but I fast forwarded, the 25, 30 years and looked at my life and like kind of played it all out. And I came to the realization and the conclusion that if I stayed and did this job, I would have a B- to B+ life at best. Like, okay, I'll retire early. Okay, I'll have some money. But it's not what I want to do. It's not how I want to be spending the majority of my time, aka the majority of my life doing. This is not it. And so I wish I could say I put in my 2 weeks, ended up being put in my 3 months because I had to wind some things down, and got back into coaching the thing that I knew, which was fitness and health. And I had a outdoor workout program here and did group community workouts and connected with the Richmond community. We had an app. I did a bunch of talks everywhere. It was really cool, and it didn't work. It didn't make nearly the money that I needed to make to do the things that I needed to do. And I learned a ton of lessons about entrepreneurship in that collective failure. And I ended up moving to Mexico for a couple reasons, mainly to open a health and wellness retreat, but also because I figured that the cost of living would be way cheaper down there and I might have a better chance of pulling this thing off if I was, you know, paying $1.50 for tacos instead of $9.50, you know, where I was. And so I partnered with an old business partner of mine and we moved 6 hours south of Cancun in the Yucatan Peninsula. We're just north of Belize, this tiny little town of 1,500 people. And we found an amazing opportunity to put a down payment on a big compound. It was like 7-8 rooms and a big open covered space. And, you know, it was, I'm playing barefoot soccer with the Ninos. I'm learning like 5 Spanish words a day. I'm drinking coconut out of trees. Everything's awesome. The only issue with all this is we moved down to Mexico on March 2nd of 2020. And timing wise, that was as poor as it gets, as 3 weeks later, all the borders are shut. The world's, you know, freaking out, regardless of how that ended up and thoughts about the entire world situation over the past 4 years. At the time, given the information we had, we made the right and tough decision to bail and come back to the States because we just didn't know what we didn't know. And I think at the very beginning of all that, there was a lot of unknowns and a lot of scary stuff. And I was learning Spanish, not fluent in Spanish, and I wouldn't know whether, you know, people are on my side in my corner or not. And so I was like, all right, we should get out of here. So I came back and I lived in that guy's walk-in closet for about a month. And I ended up working for him in his dorm room furniture removal business, which was scrubbing moldy refrigerators in a, you know, 100-degree steel warehouse for $3 a fridge. And, you know, my next come to Jesus moment was when he asked if I wanted to learn how to drive the forklift. And buddy, I did not want to learn how to drive the forklift. that is not how I projected forward how I wanted to spend my time. And so I connected with an old mentor of mine in the coaching industry, and he helped me personally first, you know, get wrap my head around this loss of this dream that I had had for a long time. And I saw how effective it was in such a short period of time that I wanted to learn more about it. And ended up, once I did learn more about story work, I made a pretty quick commitment to like, all right, I'm going to do this. I'm going to give this a real solid go. I'm going to do 1,000 sessions, professional sessions. And today, 4 years later, 3.5, 4 years later, I'm up to 1,150, right? So I've met and surpassed that goal. My next goal is 10,000, right? Which is cool to have like a 25-year goal. Also a little daunting, but still very cool. And I pretty much knew from the first time that I saw this work that this is going to be it for me. Like, this is not only fulfilling, but it's incredibly impactful. And I saw it as the through line between everything else. So I like to say that looking backwards, we can collect the dots before we connect the dots. And once I've collected all my dots, I can see how this led to that and that led to this and this. Oh, that's why I had to go down that path and, you know, yada, yada, yada. And I do have quite the collection of career skills to get me to this point.
That's quite a journey. And timing, just that's sad. I'm a personal trainer. I can attest that if you're not in the right place, it's a really bad living. And as much as I love that industry, it's, yeah, if you're not in the right place, it's bad.
Yeah.
But it sounded like you guys, that would have been cool. A total fitness retreat center.
There is an ulterior universe where I am about 19 shades darker, 100% fluid in Spanish. I got 12 dogs running around and we are rocking and rolling on the lagoon. But, you know, that is not this current reality, and that is perfectly okay. That has led me to many of my greatest things in my life. So
you fell in love with story work because your friend helped you first. Here's the big question that everybody's got now. What is story work? Because still, you and I started talking, I'm like, I think I've heard the term once, but I sure as was like, I'm curious. I don't understand it at all. So what is story work?
So, shocker, we all use words when we speak, when we think, when we write, when we read. Words are the foundation of our culture. And in my argument and in the way I like to talk about it, it's the foundation of our perception of reality, right? Because words create stories, aka belief systems. And those belief systems, how you see the world, how you see your past experiences, your present day life, your future experiences is going to, again, dictate your actual lived life experience. And so story work is the process of becoming aware of our speech patterns and the stories we tell ourselves, aka our beliefs, and taking them from our heads and putting them onto a page, or in my case, professionally, 99% of my work is done remote via Zoom and a Google Doc. So when I say write something down, I most likely mean type it out, right? But you can grab a pen and write it down just as easily as you could pull up a new Google Doc and type it out. But story work's taking our thoughts, specifically as it relates to past experiences that maybe were hurtful or traumatic or haunting. We're taking our thoughts as it relates to our current day experience where, you know, we're stuck or we have imposter syndrome or we just feel like, ugh, or maybe there's an inner critic or an inner bully that's really, really loud and mean. Once we get those words onto paper or onto the screen, then we slowly start to downshift ourselves from the fight, flight, or freeze sympathetic nervous system response state that we're in because we're thinking and saying those things into the rest and relax, feed and breed parasympathetic nervous system response state. And it's in that state where, which is the opposite of fight or flight, the opposite of stress. It's in the calm state where we can store our memories, process our emotions, heal ourselves. And once we do that, we can look forward with great clarity as opposed to through opaque and dirty windows and actually architect the reality we want for ourselves. So story work is a process and a methodology to help us deal with the stuff that we don't like about our past, present, and get really, really clear about the future.
What is people's common reaction when they're first introduced to this idea? Like I said, I had no idea. I'm like, I'm not even sure what that is, but yeah, let's talk about it.
Most people think I have something to do with copywriting, or, you know, I'm like make videos for people or like help people write books or something like that. That is not accurate. None of those are accurate. A lot of people compare it to therapy, which is partially an honor and partially like, no, not that at all. It is therapeutic. It is certainly not therapy. Therapy has helped a lot of folks. I'm a big advocate for talking about the things that are bothering you and sharing and expressing your emotions, especially as men. We don't often do that as much as we should or could. And therapy often has lacks resolution and has people just like talking in circles and drama bonding. And so that goes way beyond that. Story work does. And we get to resolutions very quickly, very effectively. And like, it's not a 60% of the time it works every time. It's like a every time it works every time type situation.
So I'm glad you answered that because I was going to relate it to therapy. Sorry.
That's okay.
So looking into you and researching what you do a little bit, what kind of things can this help people process? Because you mentioned that inner critic. I've done entire shows about our negative self-talk because for men, that's a really, really harsh issue. Most men struggle with that. But I saw like you deal with anxiety and stress. What can this do? What kind of things can this help people work through?
Yeah, great question. You know, let's start with the negative self-talk piece. If you're watching this via video, I've got a really cool representation of the light wolf, dark wolf behind me. And that's an old Native American tale where, you know, there's a battle between the light wolf and the dark wolf that's been waged inside every single one of us since the very beginning of time. And the dark wolf manifests itself as evil and fear and envy and jealousy and hatred and sadness and et cetera. And the light wolf manifests itself as love and joy and peace and kindness and altruism and happiness and et cetera, et cetera. and somebody asks, well, which one wins? And the answer is the one you feed, the one you feed. And ultimately, many people are feeding their dark wolf with the negative inner critic, the negative self-talk. And one of the very first things I do with a lot of folks, coaching-wise, is we name the dark wolf and we get verbatim on paper on the worst days, what does he say? So first of all, that's really important for people because they're disassociating that negative voice from them, you know, the self with a capital S or the soul with a capital S. It's something different. It's typically something learned from the outside. And most oftentimes it's not accurate, even though it's very mean, right? And then once we can see that, once we can downshift a bit into that state as it relates to that thing on the screen that, you know, was repeating in your head over and over and over again and causing a negative feedback loop or causing a shame spiral, right? Once we create that space and that distance, then we're able to name your light wolf and translate it, not English to French or French to Italian, but, you know, change the words to words that can help uplift and inspire and again, architect the reality we want for ourselves. And so self-talk's huge, imposter syndrome's huge, identity work is huge, how you define yourself, right? The crux of this work is in working through past experiences, right? So I like to say stuck, hurt, haunted. We'll add traumatic in there as well. Stuck is more kind of present day, but it's decisions, you know, should I stay or should I go? Transitions from a work or relationship or just like general feelings of ugh, or apathy or like the wheels aren't turning, man. Like you were just in the sand, stuff's not working. I don't know what to do. That's stuck, right? Hurt. We've all experienced hurt in our past. All of us, right? Something somebody said, something somebody did or did not do. This could have been last week. Could have been when you were 7 years old. It was a breakup. This is loss. This is grief. This is disappointment, et cetera, et cetera. All right. Everyone has experienced hurt. Some people have even experienced haunted. We're talking Hollywood. This is the stuff that the horror movies are made out of, right? You know, assaults, murders. You know, my first story ever was a kidnapping story. My third or fourth story I ever worked was the guy was a 50 cal gunner in Iraq, right? Like a lot of heavy stuff that people have been through in their past. And traumatic experiences are defined as experiences that actually cause physiological changes in the brain. So it makes the brain more susceptible to going into that fight, flight, or freeze to protect from that experience again. And again, most of us have experienced traumatic experiences in our life too. And so what all of that does is it creates dis-ease, not necessarily disease, but it creates dis-ease in our bodies when we think about that thing, or if we're triggered by something in and around that thing, or if we hear a song that, you know, so-and-so used to love and now so-and-so broke our heart or passed away, and now it's just like, ugh, it hits us super, super hard. And so story work can help get those emotions up and out and get that negative energy. You know, I'm trying to keep it as unwoo as I can, you know, but you're welcome. Get the stuck suck out so that, you know, when you think about that thing right before you go to bed, you can actually process it and your brain and body actually, again, heal from those experiences. And so it allows people to work through the stuff that they would have rather not gone through. And we obviously can't go back in time and change things, but we sure as heck can change our perception to the things that we've experienced. And once we take something out of our head and put it onto the paper, we are able to create distance and space from that story. So now we're not in the story, experiencing it over and over and over again. Now we're observing the story in the movie theater, eating popcorn and drinking soda pop and watching it happen. And that's an entirely different experience.
So what makes your coaching unique as opposed to all the other coaches out there who are trying to help people? I've worked with a couple amazing coaches who deal with trauma and stuff like that. What makes this unique?
There's an ongoing 30 plus year study at Harvard I'll let you guess. What percentage of the U.S. population has written down their goals?
Ooh, less than 8%.
Yeah, it's 3% of people have written goals. You want to take a guess at how more likely someone is to accomplish their goal if they have it written down versus not?
64%, if I remember right.
It's 10x. 10x. It's 1,000% more likely to accomplish their goals, right? And I would reckon to say that less than 1% of people have written down their fears. Less than that have written down the really terrible things that have happened to them. A lot of people journal, and that's cool. A lot of people meditate, that's cool. A lot of people do breath work, that's cool. A lot of people talk about the stuff that they've experienced and ask for help and, you know, share their feelings, and that's cool. And I think more people could do all those things. What makes story work unique is the fact that once we get something out of our head and onto the page, great, that's step one. Story is titled and written out. Step two is now we read it out loud. Nobody reads their journals out loud. It's totally different when you hear the thing that you're reading. Then we downshift even further and we slow down the pace of speech as we're reading this thing. And each time we're accessing a new layer and a new level of understanding about the situation. And we're also actualizing it with ourselves, because now it's another rep and another rep and another rep of this thing. And then we add in rhythmic breathing, rhythmic downshifting breath to the equation, where on every punctuation point, we'll add in one of these. So what happens if I breathe like that for the next minute, I'm going to be chilled out regardless of what I'm reading, whether I'm watching a horror film or not. Right. And so again, instead of just talking about something, now we're actually pulling ourselves into that rest and relax state where physiologically we can deal with it way, 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 way better. And then we go in and change the words sometimes, right? We change the word from this to that. We make the link between this and that. We go in and find accuracy or inaccuracies in the speech. So I think the methodology, take out the I think, the methodology is the key here. And then for me personally, I don't know whether it was I grew up with two little sisters or I've had probably 10,000 interpersonal relationship interactions with people over the course of my career, given multiple different careers, very good at reading people, very good at reading energy, and very good at holding space. Most importantly, I'm very good at shooting people straight and shutting up when I need to shut up. And it ain't going anywhere. I don't share anything with anybody in people's sessions. And so I'm very good at creating that set and setting, so to speak, to allow people to get into their stuff. And I always got their back coming out. And so I think that's what makes my coaching very unique, is not only the methodology, but, you know, as we talked about in the very beginning, like, this is why I'm here, bro. Like I work stories, you know, and I love it. And I'm going to keep doing it forever. And I'm really good at it. And it helps people to pretty instantly feel way different about the thing that was really bothering them.
All right. Now, guys, we've been discussing Dave's story, what story work is, how it helps people, how it affects people. In the next part of the show, we're going to do something we've never done on the show before. We're going to take a totally different approach to how this can apply to you, how you can effectively use this in your life. Instead of me trying to tell you a lot about this or just list off things, Dave and I are actually going to go into a coaching session. Dave's going to work with me live on this broadcast, and I'm going to let you just see what this is. Now, I'm a little anxious because I have no idea what's going to happen or what's going to come out of this. I have no idea what we're going to dive into. We haven't planned this. We haven't discussed this. But I want you guys to see what this really works as, what this does, and how this can be effective in your life. And then after that, we're going to get into, we'll wrap things out with Dave. He's got a generous offer for our first three listeners. And I'll tell you all about that when we come back. We're going to roll to our sponsor, and we'll be right back with more from Dave Robinson. Struggling to catch quality Z's at night? It's time to change that narrative. Sleep isn't just a luxury. It's the crucial component for your overall well-being, from managing your weight to boosting muscle growth, reducing stress, and even enhancing your daily performance. Sleep plays a vital role. Are you ready to level up your sleep game, get a better night's sleep overall? Then look no further than ghostbed.com. Join me in experiencing the difference with Ghostbed. It's been a game changer for my sleep routine over the years. That's why here at the Fallible Man Podcast, we're honored to partner with our sponsor, ghostbed.com, to bring you this discount. So head to ghostbed.com, unlock a sweet 30% discount on your order using the code Fallible. Don't wait any longer to upgrade your sleep quality. Let's make tonight the start of a better sleep and a better day is ahead. Now, let's dive back into the show. Guys, welcome back. In the last part of the show, we were discussing a little bit about Dave's story and background and what story work actually is and how it affects people, how it can be used to help you move to different things in your life. In this part of the show, we're going to do something totally different than we've ever done on the show. And that's we're going to do a live coaching session. I'm going to let Dave run the con. We have not discussed this. We have not planned this. I really have no idea where this is going, but I wanted you to be able to see exactly what story work is about and how it can be applied to your life, how it could possibly benefit you. And I couldn't think of a better way to do that than just letting you see it in action. So Dave, we're in your hands.
My man, I appreciate it. All right. So I'm going to start this off with the same thing that I tell every single one of my clients at the very, very first session that I do with them. All right. It's three things. One, if we get anything written down in this time frame that we have, it's a huge win. Huge win. Taking it from our heads, putting it on the page. That's a massive win. Number two, I'm always going to shoot you straight, as I shared earlier. And number three, what I usually say is, ain't nobody ever going to hear about it. But with this one, it's going to be the people who are listening to this podcast will hear about it. And that's it. Right. So it's not everybody, just the people that hear the show. So what that means is, you know, Brent, play at your own level, right? I'm totally okay and prepared with this being a walk in the park. I'm totally okay and prepared for this to be World War III and IV, right? And anything in between, right? So play at the level you want to play at, and we will rock and roll. To start off, what would you say your strongest emotion is right now? And rate it 1 to 10, 10's high.
It's between stress and anxiety.
Cool.
I'm not sure what word that is or what's right there, but stress and anxiety is like a 9. We're struggling.
Great. No right or wrong answers here either with any of this stuff. So now I want you to take, we've got the emotion of stress and anxiety. We've got a scale of how high it is. What does that feel like physically for you? Like sensation wise? So, you know, maybe there's sensation in your head, but get out of your head, so to speak, get into your body and tell me sensation wise, what do you experience when you experience a 9 out of 10 stressor and anxiety?
It's like a weight, like just pressing in. I'm tired. Doesn't matter how many hours I sleep, I'm tired. And there's just this constant weight sitting in my chest and shoulders.
And is that a familiar feeling to you, or is this the first time you felt that in a long time?
This is an ongoing issue for several months now, so it's been there a while. I get moments of alleviation from it, like sitting down with my kids. My daughter's my whole world, so sitting down doing this stuff with them, it kind of dissipates some. But I definitely, if I let myself feel it, it's there, and it's just heavy.
Okay. So you mentioned you've got a way to type, right? You got a OneNote in front of you, right? Mm-hmm. Pull that up for me if you would. And yeah, if you're listening at home, you could do this as well. You can answer this exact same question that I'll ask, and we'll set like a, you know, 1 minute timer-ish, right? This will be kind of a top of mind. The question is, what area of your life are you feeling the most stuck in right now? And why? What area of your life are you feeling the most stuck in right now? And why? while Brent's writing this out, I encourage you to maybe hit pause on the podcast and grab a pen and paper and answer this question yourself. And you've got an opportunity to move through a couple different layers of this process, even without a coach sitting in front of you and talking directly to you. So there's a beautiful concept that I love in my coaching called heal one, heal all. Most of the time it's done one-on-one. And when I do group work, the really cool thing is you don't even necessarily have to raise your hand and participate in order to get a lot out of the group sessions that occur, because somebody's going through a story you can relate to, and it can help you move your emotion as well, listener. So Brent, when you're ready, just let me know.
Yeah, now this one is an easy question for me.
Okay.
Stuck is my financial situation. Cool. I took a year off my full-time job, left it to take my podcast and my business with the Fallible Man full-time, and have not built up enough sponsors to financially cover that. And so right now we are financially strapped. I've actually spent my entire life savings working through this for the last year. And I've so many guys out there will be able to identify when you're out of work. I've applied for so many jobs I know I'm qualified for, jobs I know I'm great at, jobs I did for years, have lots of experience at. And I just have no job prospects right now. We're ridiculously in debt. I've got no income coming in to fix that. And so just the financial stress of not knowing how I'm going to pay my bills or buy groceries or anything like that is weighty at this point.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think you're right. And that a lot of other men and other folks can identify with that. I certainly can identify with that numerous times in my life. How does expressing that feel?
Like physically or emotionally?
And both.
Okay. Physically is like a gut punch. Like okay. It's hard to swallow because it makes me feel very weak and like a failure.
And emotionally, how does that feel?
Just emotionally, I feel like a failure, and it's a total, if I let myself sit in that, I'm very depressed. It's very hard it's starting to affect my sleep. Like I'm wanting to sleep longer because the energy is just not there. Because of the weight of everything is taking a negative outlook. I'm feeling it's hard to stay positive.
Yeah. Totally. Sensation wise, what are you experiencing? Is that weight and burden there? You said I punched the gut. What else is there?
It's definitely heavier to talk about it. Actually, it's like pressing in as we're talking.
Yep. Let's read out what you have again. And this time I want you to just slow down your pace just a little bit. All right. So reading out exactly what you wrote down on the page and just slow down your rate of speech as you do so.
My financial situation with no income and no job prospects is just wearing me down.
Great job. Have you been in this situation before?
Not to this extreme. I've been without work before for a short period of time, but never anything to this extreme. We had enough money set aside to go a certain amount of time. I passed that 6 months ago. We are in debt up to our eyeballs. We've borrowed money from everybody we can to try and survive. I have a household of five and I'm the sole income. And so it's a nuisance sensation because my wife and I have been through a time where we were jobless, but not with my children and my mom living with us because she lives with us. Not with this kind of responsibility and dependence.
Could you turn this into a should statement?
I'm not quite sure how. Explain.
Is there a way to answer the or fill in the blanks from I should dot dot dot? What comes to mind there when it comes to your the situation you're sharing, your financial situation?
I should find a job and I should have been hired for over half the jobs I applied for just with my experience and skill sets. And so it feels very hopeless almost.
Okay.
I don't understand. I'm very confused about why I'm not finding a job with the skill sets I bring.
So stress and anxiety in the beginning was a 9 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the word hopeless, right? If you had to put a label on it, you know, your situation or how you feel right now, not the situation, but your current state, what would you say?
Determined.
Determined. Excellent. Okay, so write this down for me. I should find a job.
Okay.
Perfect. Say that out loud for me.
I should find a job.
Great. Most people, when they use the word should, need to, or have to, experience the feelings of external pressure. We actually call those categories of speech, they're in their own category. It's called pressure language. Most people don't like it when their boss tries to tell them what to do, or their spouse tries to tell them what to do, or their parents try to tell them what to do, or the government tries to tell them what to do. In fact, most people don't like it when they themselves try to tell themselves what to do. And in fact, earlier today, I thought to myself, I should drink more water. And then I instantly thought, the rebel in me was like, you know what? Screw you, Dave. And like, it's good for me. And yeah, you know, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go pour another coffee. Right. Words can create different feelings and emotions in the body. And there's no right or wrong answer for this. Take out the word should and write the word could, and then say that out loud.
I could find a job.
Any difference physically for you with that?
Not a whole lot, but just having this conversation, the weight feels a little less. It felt really like I could feel a difference as we've said some of these things out loud. Mm-hmm.
Take out the word could and write the word can for me and then read that out loud.
I can find a job.
Say that again for me and then add a big breath at the end. And what I'm looking for with the breath is volume in through your nose, big old breath in, and length out on the exhale. So a long exhale out. So it'll So repeat that third one for me and then add that breath in.
I can find a job.
What do you notice?
That feels lighter on the chest.
Most likely a couple reasons for that. Okay. The first is that the word could brings us back into the realm of possibility. So we go from a lot of pressure to a land where, like, okay, despite recent past evidence, it is possible with that rate of speech or that type of speech to find a job, right? The word can puts it in the affirmative while adding to the possibility, potentially moving it even into probability, right? The breath helps pull us down into that state where now we can see things just a little bit differently and feel things a little bit differently without the stress of the should statement, right? So I'm going to have you finish this sentence and type it or write it out, whichever one you did there. I can find a job because ... And give me three of those. I can find a job because option A, I can find a job because B, and because C. And when you're done, add the word breathe at the end of each sentence, just as the reminder, right? So I can't find a job because, number one, add the word breathe at the end. I can't find a job, number two, add the word breathe at the end. I can't find a job because, number three, add the word breathe at the end. And when you're ready, read that out loud, the three options. And when you see that word breathe,
I can find a job. I have a valuable skill set. I can find a job. I have a lot of experience. I can find a job. I bring value to other people and to companies.
Big breath. Big exhale. Your shoulders just dropped 2 inches.
Really?
They were up here. Now they're down here. What do you notice after reading that out loud?
It's the pressure isn't near as much. Like my chest doesn't feel near as tight or heavy right now. I am less likely to break down and cry. I was getting real close there. My head feels more clear.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Like it's almost a tingling sensation in my head.
Yep. Our words impact our breath. Our breath drives our physiology. And so when we have words that affect our breath, we'll call it negatively, though I don't love that terminology, but when we have words that affect our breath from the context of creating shallow, high in the chest, high and tight breathing, right? Versus that's going to drive our state. Now, the best affirmations or intentions or mantras or ribeyes and T-bones to your light wolf come from a prior limiting belief or a prior statement that created tension before. So for me, my anchor statement is I love myself. I love myself. And that's because that came from a large swath of my life where I hated myself. Hated myself. And so for me, that statement alone can pull me out of a whole mess of problems. Right? For you in this particular situation, providing the positive outcome and the reasons for that positive outcome creates an entirely different internal state and mind state as it relates to this situation. Now, have you gotten a job in the last 20 minutes? No, right? And action dispels overwhelm. Action casts out overwhelm. With this positivity, with this, I can get a job because I've got a great skill set and I can provide a ton of value for, you know, other companies. You are much more likely to then go out and apply for a job than, oh, I should get a job. This fucking sucks, right, et cetera, excuse my cursing, right? And the change in physiological state helps raise the tide for all boats. Right? The change in physiological state helps you to be in a better me, better everyone environment, meaning your interactions with your wife, mother, daughters going to be better. Your interaction when you do walk into that job interview is going to be different. The interaction on the next podcast is going to be different, and you never know who's going to listen, right? And what things could come of that. And so if you had to put a label on your strongest emotion right now and rate that 1 to 10, what would that be?
Encouraged. Say 6 or 7.
Take that all day long. We'll call that a 6.5. So we went from a stress and anxiety 9.5 to an encouraged 6.5 out of 10 in 22 minutes. On something that is a major, major, major part of everybody's life, which is their financial situation. So, hashtag story work, hashtag words. Yeah.
Well, guys, it's not scary. I was a little anxious to start out with it, right? Was that scary? You guys have hung out with us through this whole thing. You've heard what's going on. This isn't scary. This isn't some like woo-woo crazy, right? This is something you can do. And I will be honest, guys. I am always honest with you. Like, really, my chest doesn't feel as heavy. I feel more positive. This is a very difficult subject for me. It's been a lot of stress in my family for several months now. And I do feel better. And if nothing else, I feel better at the moment. And having that relief is huge. Yeah.
And so what I would encourage you to do, Brent, is take those three statements that you have and, you know, edit at your will, right? Edit them however you'd like. Keep them if that's what you want to do. And then write them down or print them off and put them places where you'll see them. Put them in your car or truck. Tape them on the refrigerator. Write it on your bathroom mirror. Keep it by your bedside table. Put it in your journal and put it right next to your computer. So that now those are the things that you can say and remind yourself of and have them be present. You know, if you're listening to this and you've ever trained a dog, always have treats in your pocket if you've got a puppy. Always, 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 because it's that positive reinforcement and that positive reminder. Sit, good boy, treat, great. Read that out loud. That's the food for the light wolf. That's the food for the light wolf. So I can't find a job because I'm skilled and capable. The more reps you have of that, the more likely you are to take action and the more likely you are to be in a calmer state when you do. So listener, for whatever your should statement was, right? Go through that same process, should to could to can because, and then breathe. And whatever that end product is, rep it. Because just like the gym, you can't go into the gym one time and do, you know, 8 sets of bicep curls and now you got bigger biceps for life. Like, that's not how it works, right? It takes reps, repetitions, and consistency. And unlike the gym, unlike fitness, and unlike health, wellness, how you feel about yourself and your current life situation, can change like that.
Now, guys, if this is ringing a bell for you, okay, you know, you're sitting here listening to this, you know there are some things weighing you down. And that might be negative self-talk, that might be anxiety, stress, any number of things that are weighing you down. This is another tool for the toolbox, guys. This is another opportunity and option. You know, we're all about presenting you guys with options and tools for your toolbox to live the best life for you. If you're connecting with this, if you're connecting with Dave, right, you can start your journey this way. Dave has very generously offered that for my first three listeners who respond with the subject line story work to info@thefallibleman.com, he will provide my first three listeners who respond to the, like I said, email info@thefallibleman, subject line story work. Dave will take my first three listeners who respond with that and give you a free session with him. Okay. I have the promo codes, so email me info@thefallibleman.com with the subject line story work. If you want to try this out for yourself, if you want to give this a shot and see what it can do for you, Dave is giving you an opportunity for that, which thank you for